you know what that song means. A little pep in your step. Why not? It's time for the Home Improvement Show, your chance to ask Walter Assey, president of Renovco, all of your most pressing questions when it comes to your projects. Maybe you started something and you don't know how to finish it. Maybe you don't know where to start. 514-790-0800. The best place to reach us, of course, is by phone, or you can send us a text message on the same number. Walter Assey, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Let me tell you something about your life. Your wife, Cassandra, she sent me a text message a little earlier this week about you inspecting everywhere. You go for walks and you're inspecting infrastructure as you walk. You never take a minute off.
It shows you the faith I have in the Montreal infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't just go for a walk.
You can't blame me. I have to look for bolts and concrete chunks. And I mean, you know, I have young kids. So.
Cassandra, thank you for I laughed. I laughed very, very hard. She's walking steps behind you and you're like actually grabbing at a fence. So he's always working hard, keeping us all safe. 514-790-0800. There it is. Tony is on the line. And he has a question about a roof, I think. Tony, can you hear us?
Yes. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, I have a flat roof, gravel and asphalt, gravel and tar, or asphalt, whatever, the old roofs. And I want to replace it, and they're telling me I have to replace it with a TPO or some other type of roof. What is suggested?
What do you mean you have to?
Well, it's leaking.
No, I understand, but why are you saying you have to replace it with a TPO or elastomeric? Why not?
Well, apparently the municipal regulations in Rosemount, that's what they're...
Okay. So the I mean the two more popular ones now are the TPO and the elastomeric roof.
Right.
Depends. I mean, I prefer personally elastomeric roofs. You are in a lot of municipalities. You're allowed to still use tar and gravel. The only difference is you would have to use white gravel. Mm-hmm. For environmental purposes. So I would check myself into this because we have to be careful with one thing, Tony. Roofers that don't do tar and gravel will push TPO and elastomeric. Now, okay. I'm not saying that elastomeric roofs are not better. They are, but they're more expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if budget is an issue for you or, you know, you're selling the house in a couple of years and you just want to go back with tar and gravel, in a lot of municipalities it's still allowed. I don't know about Rosemount. I haven't checked. So I would check myself. The reason I prefer elastomeric roofs, it's because it's way lighter on the deck itself. It's easier to spot any... faults or any leaks rather than the tar and gravel. Because, you know, technically for you to know where the roof is leaking from, water does travel. So it's not really, if it's leaking in your bathroom, it doesn't mean that that's where the roof is leaking.
Correct.
It could be leaking from the front and leaks to the back. In a tar and gravel situation, you have to take out the gravel to see where things are bubbling, where the crack is, and it's a bit more difficult to actually point it out. The other thing with tar and gravel that I don't particularly like is how many plies you get. So, you know, you're typically sold anywhere between 4 to 5 plies, but a lot of the roofs we've inspected, we found there was like 3 plies of tar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to really stand for a couple of days watching these guys and counting the plies? Nobody does, you know, very few.
Right.
So, you know, there is also that, you know, that nervousness about it. Whereas in elastomeric roof, they can't really cheat as far as, you know, getting the job done. So, you know, your inspection is a lot easier. So even if you were to hire an inspector, he doesn't have to babysit the whole job. He can just come at the end and see if everything was done correctly.
Okay.
You know, so that's the second thing. What I would really recommend is light color elastomeric. Because that's going to mm-hmm. increase the life of the roof. And, you know, white is white, grayish, like those light colors. Because, you know, again, for any roof, sun rays is really the biggest enemy. Right?
Sure.
So
right.
The lighter the color, the better it is. And it's good for the environment. Plus, it does not heat so much your attic, which then would heat actually your home as well. So there's like... environmental aspect to this, but there's also longevity for the roof aspect as well.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for that call, Tony.
One last thing, Tony.
Oh, sure, go
ahead.
One
last thing before I forget, and that's very important. If you do go with the elastomeric, what I would like you to do is just ensure that the roofer shows you that he have a torch on torch application insurance, because elastomeric roofs, it's an open flame. They want to just ensure, you want to ensure that they have that type of insurance. It's a specific insurance that they have to buy.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much, Tony. 514-790-0800, your chance to ask Walter Assey your questions. Walter Assey, of course, is the president of Renovco. Text line coming in here, a message, I should say, from Michael in Brossard, Walter. He says, good morning. What is the best tile-specific primer to use on blue drywall? This is for a bathroom wall outside of the shower space. Again, best tile-specific primer to use on a blue drywall in the bathroom wall outside the shower space.
What do you mean tile specific? It's a drywall, so I don't understand the word tile there. It's confusing me.
Mm-hmm. Michael, do you want to? I asked Michael if he wanted to call in, and he said he prefers to stick to text. Okay, Michael, if you prefer to stick to text, just specify via text what you meant by that, and we'll get Walter to answer that. Another text question here coming in. Hello, Walter. Is it too late to do a little painting outside? I want to paint some old wooden windowsills. Is it too cold? Is the temperature right? Is it too humid?
It is too cold now. Last week would have been better. Usually most applications, I mean, the most comfortable is about anywhere between 18 to 21 degrees. Oh. But here's where it's going to be a bit, he's going to be stuck between a rock
it's Joan,
and
a girl,
hard,
a woman, yes.
Sorry, she's going to be stuck between a rock and a hard place. If your wood is exposed, not painting it is going to cause a lot more problems by causing wood rot. So you have a better chance of painting it now only to prevent the rot, because again, if there's no protection on the wood, then next year, it's not going to be a painting project. It's going to be a replacement of wooden sills project. And that's much bigger and much more complicated.
So even though it's not going to be built, the paint to last, better to do it.
Yeah, it's probably going to peel. It's probably going to bubble. It's probably not going to be the best finish. But you know what? Better do that than replace a whole sill. So next year, you're probably going to have to open another painting party towards spring, early summer, and which is actually the best time because it's not that hot either, because it cannot be too hot either. So, but that's pretty much the gist of it. Really.
Say again, what is the ideal temperature you said for the painting?
So 18 to 21 would be like optimal. You don't want to also paint in direct sunlight. So like, you know, if it's a nice day, like in the early morning is usually the best time. So you don't get direct sunlight on the paint itself.
Like, okay.
So you have to kind of use some common sense with that. You don't want to overheat the surfaces that you're painting. And you don't want the surfaces to be very cold either.
Okay, 514-790-0800. Lots of text messages coming in. I promise you, Walter does not bite. It's better because these text messages are quite lengthy to describe the situation. When you should just, if you can, safely pick up the phone and give us a call, 514-790-0800. It's the best way to get on the line. Gail is waiting. We'll get to Gail in just a bit. Don't go anywhere, Gail. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show, your chance to get all of your home improvement questions answered by Walter Assey. Lots of text messages coming in. I love it, but it's best to call. Because, as you know, Walter, we say this all the time. Some of these problems are complex, right? And it's harder to understand what they're saying.
You're absolutely right.
Through the
right.
text line.
You're
okay?
Absolutely right. At least we can get the
gist of it. Yeah.
The gist of it and ask.
And you're lovely to chat to, Walter. You don't bite.
Sometimes.
Gail has been waiting very patiently on the line. And Gail has a question about energy subsidies because she's having a hard time understanding how they work exactly. Gail, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Yes, right now I have natural gas heating, and I use also some electricity in my basement. I have some baseboard heaters and things like that. Now, And for air conditioning, my air conditioning is not a heat pump. Now, I'm 74 years old. I want to stay in my house as long as I can. But I see there's subventions to get that whole system updated. And I'm wondering, like, long term, like, how soon will I, how long would I have to wait before I start saving money for myself, like, after the cost?
The cost of what, though?
Like, well, Energier is offering a system where they would combine my electricity with my heat with a thermopump and install that, and they say that the government subsidizes it.
Okay, so you mean you're changing your furnace and. Which is from natural gas to buy energy, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure exactly what I mean, but I know that, you know, I keep hearing that if I should have a thermopump. But then when listening to you, I also heard, well, your thermopump should coordinate with their furnace. So I'm like, well, my furnace is like, 10 years old, my new installation is 10 years old. Is it worth trying to do that? And I don't know what the future of natural gas is going to be anyway. And so I just decided, and my son was saying, well, you know, maybe you'll save money every year, but will it be worth the cost of installing this whole new system?
Okay, so I get the gist of it now. You see why we say call instead of texting?
Gail?
Been, yeah,
yes.
That would have
Thank
been
Thank you,
like...
Gail.
All right, so look, you can get up to $5,000 back on heat pumps and subsidies. That's a good news. The other good news for you is the furnace, 10 years old, is not a very, very old furnace per se. So there is a good possibility that we find something very compatible with it. And the best thing is, you obviously, if you have, for example, a Carrier, you get a Carrier heat pump or a Lennox or whatever, like the same brand. The technicians are able to tell you what's compatible and what's not.
Okay.
All right. So there is a very good chance that you just need to install a new heat pump.
I see. Okay.
Now, why we say there's going to be a real savings there is because the new heat pumps, they actually heat up until, they work up until minus 35.
Uh-huh.
They don't take a lot of electricity like a furnace would. So you will be saving immediately money on energy. And now that there are subventions in place, it actually even makes more sense to do it this way. So it's a win-win at the end. Like, you're going to be getting some money back from the government. You're going to be saving, and you're going to have some air conditioning in the summer as well.
I see. Okay. Well, that sounds like a good way to go. I'm going to check that out.
Gail, thank you so much.
I had another point that I wanted to bring up, because I keep hearing all this talk about people getting new roofs. I got a new membrane roof. It's probably been about 12 years now. And they didn't change the flashing. And I didn't know anything about that. They put on the old flashing and it was bent, and people kept telling me it didn't matter. Well, when I kept getting like effervescence on my bricks, and I had problems with them. And the guy who did my bricks, he said, well, one of the things you have to do right away is change your flashing after I do the repairs. And he put on a much wider flashing with a little lip on the bottom. And since then, I haven't had that problem again. So I just wanted to mention that because, you know,
Yeah.
The people who did my roof didn't say anything.
So, funny you mentioned that, because I had actually literally a client yesterday that I was having the same exact discussion with. We were comparing two different quotations. And, you know, she was kind enough to share the other quotation that she got. And I'm looking at it and I'm seeing that they're reusing the same flashing, reusing the same maximums, reusing the same plumbing vents. And not only that, they're not even removing the old flat roof. They're going with an elastomeric roof on top of it. So all of these are red flags. Someone that is already, before starting the job, cutting corners, specifically on a roof, makes me worry, okay? The idea is very simple. You know, everybody can be competitive in price just to lower the price to get the job. But that already is starting in bad faith. You know, you're making a brand new roof. There's no reason why, even if you didn't have fluorescence and water infiltration, which, you know, again, reusing the old flashing that's 30, 40, 50 years old, sometimes full of rust, full of dents, full of holes, is not a good practice. But just from a curb appeal perspective, you don't want to be seeing bent flashing and old flashing and things and upside down. And, you know, so, you know, just that by itself, you have to ask yourself questions. And that's where the fine print becomes important. We always tend to say, okay, I want a new roof. I want a 50-year-old shingle. That is one part of the equation. There's so many other things you look at in a roof that are equally important, in certain cases even more important than the shingle itself. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, Gail. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for confirming that I did the right thing, finally.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for your information.
No problem, Gail. We've got a lot of callers on the line. We see each and every one of you, 514-790-0800 on the text line. People are, they're listening to us. They said, okay, thank you. I'm going to start calling. 514-790-0800, your chance to ask your questions to Walter. I say, Jim, do we have time to start a call or should we? Well, we can start a call. We'll start a call. We might have to interrupt it for a wee break. Mike has been waiting very patiently on the line. Mike has a question about attic insulation.
Hi, Walter. Thanks for taking the call today. I've got a house that was built in 1982 and completely renovated in 2011. And I changed the roof completely when I moved in, had a new roof, asphalt shingle roof installed in 2022. I started noticing after the first year in the house that my hydro bills were a little higher than I expected. And in my son's room, it was I smelled like an attic musty smell coming from the room when I'd go in there. So I called a company that, you know, specializes in attic insulation. They went up there. They took a bunch of pictures of the attic, and we found that there were many spots of the ceiling where the gyps was exposed directly. It looks like the electrician who installed the pocket lights in the ceiling of the top floor just moved the insulation, didn't put it back, and you know, big mess in there. And I think it would explain a lot of my heat loss. So unfortunately, a couple of companies that I've called have all refused to do the work because it's a split-level house and it's hard to access some parts of the attic and people don't want to touch it. Do I have any options into how I get something like this fixed and
Mike,
then loan in with
some
of those?
This is going to be the cliffhanger right here because you're going to have to wait for that answer. We have time for a tiny break. Don't go anywhere and we see all the other callers. This is the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800, your chance to ask Walter Assey, President, CEO, the Captain of Renovco, all of your questions when it comes to your home improvement. Mike has been waiting on the line, and Mike, it was a cliffhanger before. Nutshell again, what was going on with your attic and your insulation? Remind us.
Okay, yeah. So I have a home where when I moved in, everything seemed fine on the inspection. But I noticed that there was some smell in some of the rooms upstairs. Hydro was a little high. So I had a company come take a look. They went up there. They found many spots where the fiberglass was just not placed on the gypsum rock. And the electrician who had come in and installed pocket lights had moved the insulation and doubled it up in places and left it bare in others. So obviously it was badly insulated. That company gave us a quote, signed the contract. Work was about to start. Then they canceled the contract, sent a new estimator over who said they wouldn't do the work anymore because the access was a little tight. It's a split-level house with multiple layers in the roof.
And we're kind of waiting now and trying to figure out what do we do about this problem. We'd love to blow in cellulose or something, but I feel kind of stuck.
How tight is the access, Mike?
So the entry into the attic is fine. There's a door. It's with a ladder, really easy to get into. It's like some of the parts in the depths past that entrance can be about maybe 2 feet of working space between where the beams are and where the top of the roof is.
Okay. And these problematic places are accessible because an electrician did access them before.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So
someone has been up there.
The challenge is that when the electrician installed those, that might have been at the time where the house was completely gutted and renovated in 2011. And it's possible that, you know, there were parts of the ceiling on the top floor that were just completely open and made it easier for him to get into. I'm not sure how he did it. So he might not have come in by the same access.
Okay. All right. So look, from a blowing the cellulose perspective, it's not a biggie at all. Mm-hmm. They can literally stick their head through the attic shaft and just blow the cellulose. Where it becomes tricky and dicey is in those tight corners where we don't want to overblow cellulose and block your soffits.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, it becomes a real problem getting in there to kind of unblock it, right?
Right.
So it becomes a lot of common sense in this. You might not be able to get to the R50 that you want to get to, and in those tight spaces, Mike, I don't even think you should, because that will be, if they're tight, that means the ventilation access from the soffit is tight. Mm. So you don't want to go as high there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's, you know, like when I'm looking at a house in general, I always look at the roofing angles, the slopage. And, you know, I can literally tell you from just looking at how the house was constructed, which is going to be a problematic roof just because the design was flawed. So any roof that is designed with little access for ventilation, technically, this is usually, thank God, it's an older design, so 50s, 60s, where they only thought that they need R22 in attics. Mm-hmm. And now we know R50 is the answer. So that's where you're going to have to kind of play the common sense. So if you tell them, bring it up to code everywhere in my attic, everybody's going to run away because they know they're going to cause you other problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to be very clear about your ask. You say on those tight spaces, I just want you to add, you know, a little bit, just enough to, you know, get me out of trouble, but not, you know, enough to kind of block my soffits, right? And then you know, so that's one thing. The other thing is you really find a very, very, very small guy and you get him in there and he does the job. You have
no,
to be,
there
be,
will be no kidnapping of small guys.
So, you know, the, I mean... so that would be like option two. And option three, which is my least favorite, obviously, for obvious reasons. The other thing you could do is, I mean, 2 feet is not a comfortable place. So you have someone that maybe is being a bit of a prima donna. You just need to kind of shop other contractors that are, especially now, it gets to be a bit like slower, the business. So you might have someone that is a bit more willing to crawl around in that attic.
Okay, so this is a reputable company. Like they've even advertised on CJD. Like that's where we got the number. It feels like they're one of the well-known. Do you have, you know, others that we should be calling?
I have a whole bunch, and what you really want to call, I don't know if you're calling an installation specialist, that's very important, versus just calling a roofer that does this or someone that does this on the side. Is that what you're calling?
We're calling an installation specialist, yes.
Okay. So, yeah. I do have a bunch to call. Typically, they work in areas, so sometimes geographically it can make a difference. I could do this off air.
Yeah, Jim, you want to get that information?
Off, people and try to. And I'm not endorsing these companies. I'm just telling you what's out there. Let me know how it goes, Mike.
Thank you very much, Walter.
My pleasure.
Mike, thank you so much.
Sorry, one last thing for Mike. That might help. I apologize. I wanted to talk about it. The other thing that Mike can do is if he finds a very a handy person, you don't necessarily need to add to blow in the insulation. You can have him, you can buy some bat insulation, and the guy can crawl around. Because all that you want is someone willing to work in confined and tight spaces and spend the time doing it. They have to be flexible, they have to be agile, they have to be handy and comfortable to work in tight spaces. They cannot be claustrophobic. But what you could do is you could actually also hire a guy that just goes there and add bat insulation in those specific problematic areas.
Okay, Mike, Jimmy's going to take your info and we'll try to arrange everything and
Thank you so much.
You can follow up. Okay, 514-790-0800. Lots of calls coming in. Let's see who's been waiting. Gina's been on the line. I see all the other calls. Don't worry, we're going to get to you. Gina is on the line and she has a question about plywood. Gina, can you hear us?
Yes.
Take it away.
Yes. I bought marine grade plywood to replace a little section on my exterior balcony. And I would like to know, do I need, I was thinking of putting, you know, like a preservative on the open, on the surface, like a Pentox or something like that. Is it a good idea?
I mean, it doesn't hurt. It does come treated. I mean, usually the way they construct this is with waterproof glue.
Yes.
In order to ensure, I mean, they use it on boats, they use it on things that really get used and abused by water. Yes. It doesn't hurt to do it, but, you know, it's the good news for you, it's really optional.
It's what?
Optional.
It's optional.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I want to paint it, you know.
So, I mean, paint in general is the best protection for all types of wood on the outside. So that's technically the natural protection for wood.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, if you would take a pine wood and you would paint it, you're now protecting it against the element. Now you are, the good news for you is that you're already in the marine plywood, so it's already protected. And then adding a paint to it, it's just going to protect it some more. That's
okay.
Pretty much it. It's not going to hurt it in any way. In the contrary, you're just going to help preserving it even more.
So I don't need to put a preservative like Pentox before painting?
No. The painting itself is a protection.
Okay. And do I need...
Obviously, exterior painting.
Yes, exactly. Do I need to put paint on both sides of the plywood, or just the size is going to be up, you know, because under I have soffit, you know, to close the...
You don't need to paint the bottom that is not exposed to water.
No, okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Gina, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. I see Angie and Jimmy on the line. We're going to get to you in just a few moments. I know you've been waiting patiently and we appreciate it. This is the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. 514-790-0800, your chance to ask Walter Assey all of your questions. I see Angie and Jimmy on the line. I see you both. We're going to get to you both. We're going to start with Angie because she's been waiting a tiny bit longer. Angie, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Okay, good morning, Walter. Thanks for taking my call. I presently heat my home with a bi-energy boiler using oil and electricity. I want to change to an electric boiler and have been getting quotes with different brand recommendations. So I'm trying to decide between the Thermalec and the Thermo 2000 BTH Ultra. Mm-hmm. And wanted to know what your thoughts are. Also about the annual maintenance on these boilers.
Okay, so let's start with the easy part, which is the maintenance. Electric furnaces require very little maintenance. So in most cases, you don't even need to have an annual maintenance on it. What you need is just to ensure that change your filter often, as recommended. And what you also want to ensure in the newer installation is that they do what you call an installation check, which a lot of ventilation companies unfortunately don't, just to make sure from the factory, you know, the blower is well anchored, well screwed, because sometimes, you know, things in transport, they move, they shake, they bake, and they get and parts get loose. Okay. So just ensure that they actually open and you know, make sure everything is well anchored. Mm-hmm. Specifically with the blower, that seems to be a more common problem. You know, just gets dislodged out of place or get loose somewhere, and then, you know, within a few months or sometimes just Murphy's Law, right after the warranty expires, it starts giving you problems and starts making these weird noises. So that's for the maintenance cost. As far as the brand is concerned, number one, you want to see which brand is giving you more subvention back.
Okay.
Because in most cases, the technology is very similar. There's no really complicated technology in electric furnaces. You know, the Thermal 2000 have more presence as far as, you know, parts are concerned or trained technicians. But that doesn't mean much as far as, you know, if you're getting a bigger subvention from for the other brand, they all work. They both work. What I would look for is the warranties.
Okay.
They're all very similar these days, usually 1 year on labor and 10 years on parts. So I would look at that. I would look at the subvention back from the government.
Right.
And I would choose the one that's giving me the most money back, really.
Okay.
Angie, I hope that helps you out.
Thank you very much. It does.
All right. Have a great one.
I had very strict instructions and I have time to spare you.
You do. Listen, I'm keeping you under control here with these answers. Jimmy, I know you've been waiting for long and we appreciate you, Jimmy.
That's okay.
Take it away.
I'm listening to you guys and I'm learning a lot as
there
well.
There you go, so Jimmy.
I'm going to piggyback on what Mike was saying with his roof. I have a roof. I'm lucky I have crawl space up there, which is good. A good 5 or 6 feet, actually. And I noticed my cellulose, when I did my little inspection last week, has gone down, which they say is normal because it shrinks over the years, or I guess it collapses. I moved it around with a rake, Walter, and I seem to have refluffed it. Now I'm wondering if it would be worth to give it a fluff to add some. I noticed where the cardboards are, if I'm explaining myself properly, where the soffits, they add cardboard. There's like very little left there, so I would have pushed it in with a rake or something. So I'm just looking for that kind of advice. And also, my trap door is one of those fancy ones with the ladder that's built in. I don't think there's any insulation there. Should I go crazy and put a blanket there in the winter or something just to make it more comfortable?
All right. So, I mean, number one, it's not about how things are looking. It's about how many inches of insulation you have in your attic, whether it's fluffy or not. You know, at this point, it does not really.
Correct.
You know,
it was about 8 inches.
Yeah. Actually. So you would need anywhere between 14 to 16 inches, 14 to 15.5 inches to be exact, to get to your R50 that is required. So you're halfway there, okay?
Okay.
You need to add, or else you do have loss of heat for sure. Now, the areas that worries me, the fact that you have where the stereo vents is, that's where the cartons you were referring to, if you don't have much insulation, that will cause a lot of ice damming, and that might potentially cause you problems in the future. What you also don't want, it's not just about heat loss. This is also about condensation in your attic. So when the cold from the outside meets the hot from your home, condensation happens. Condensation goes into the wood, and then the wood starts rotting and molding and creating you all kind of problems. So that's what we also don't want. Now, where it gets worse is if your fiberglass insulation gets wet, it loses its R value, right?
Mm-hmm.
So areas where you could have potentially had old water damages that were not remediated, these guys, even though the insulation is there, it's probably at R0 in these particular places. So right. The good news is you need to add.
Okay.
Your trap door is probably an area where people ignore the most, and that's an area where creates wreaks havoc, really, if it's not insulated. What I would even go, it's not really go crazy and put a blanket, because blankets are not going to help much, is to insulate that trap door altogether and, okay. and make sure it's well sealed. That's what I would do. And, you know, to insulate it is not a biggie. What you need is glued in styrofoam, and then you just make sure it's nice and snug when you're closing it and opening it, so it's not...
So two-inch styrofoam would be enough, though?
Four-inch would be my recommendation.
Okay. And near the rafters, do I go more than 16 or less, or do I go 16 even the whole attic?
Well, even if you have the space. If you don't have the space, near the soffits, you want to go lower, actually, not higher. Because you don't want to block the air circulation. It's a hard out.
It's the hard out. That's we had to say goodbye. Jimmy, that music means that we that was all we had together, but I hope that it helps you out, Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy's already off the line. Okay, listen, thank you to each and every one of you for listening, and thank you. We didn't get to all of the text messages. We got to most of the calls, though, so that is a good job. If you missed your chance to ask Walter your question, what is the button on the Renovco website?
The Ask Walter.
Okay, and he checks it all the time. I'm off next weekend. I don't know who your co-host will be. It'll be a surprise for you.
Surprise! I'm used to it, Ben.
Have a great one. I'm back tomorrow with another edition of Weekends with Joanne Brakes.